The world of 911 emergency dispatching is brutally diverse. One minute you can be talking with someone about parking violations.
What's the process we are to take to have people towed? Because it's actually delaying the mail.
And then all hell can break loose. Then the rest of the day is crazy. We could have murders.
Hill County 911, what's your emergency?
I just killed my children.
Home invasions.
He's in my house.
I shot him.
You shot him?
He was coming up towards me and I shot him.
Natural disasters.
Tornado came through and got us. I'm buried under a bomb to roll my life.
Even bombings. My show, Music City 911, will put you in the dispatcher's chair, put you ear to ear with the callers and responders, and keep you on edge from start to finish. I hope to both educate and entertain, as I'm a 911 dispatcher with over 20 years experience. And just like dispatching, every episode is different from the last. Music City 911. Real 911 calls, real 911 dispatchers. Available to listen to on any podcast app.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
I have a story for you today from Red Deer, Alberta, and I don't believe I've covered a Red Deer story yet. Today is a listener suggestion from Christine, and my apologies that it has taken this long to get to it. I know that you have been waiting to hear it for about 6 months now. This is the murder of Tegan Klein.
I don't remember anything after I left the house until I got to jail.
The law didn't come into my mind. I wasn't caring about the law. I was dealing with dead children on my hands. Fuck the law. I'm in trouble, man. My kids are dead.
But once I lied, I continued to lie. Yes, sir.
Wow.
You know, oh, what a tangled web we weave. But once I told a lie, I had to keep lying.
And what kind of person would do something like that?
I know.
I'm asking you, what kind of person do you think would do something like that?
Obviously not someone, not a good person.
And yes, I did actually pronounce Tegan's name correctly. I would have pronounced it Tegan, but I saw her uncle on like a press conference with the RCMP and he pronounced it Tegan. And I'm pretty sure uncles don't usually mispronounce their nieces' names. I'm not going to play that press conference for you because they specifically asked for their privacy, which was back in 2009 that happened. Red Deer is a great little city. It's right in the smack of the middle of our province of Alberta. So it's like a hour and 20 minute drive from Calgary down to the south and about the same going up north to Edmonton. There's about 100,000 residents there. Their economy is based a lot on healthcare, construction, and of course, oil and gas is Alberta after all, and some manufacturing. As almost all places in Canada, it was originally inhabited by the Blackfoot, Cree, and Stoney First Nations, who named the river that basically runs through the town Waskasuu-Sepee, which means Elk River. And elk were, they were once nicknamed Red Deer because of their sort of brownish, reddish coats. When the white settlers came to town, it became pretty prosperous. They weren't hit with the same drought conditions that were going on during the Great Depression, so they were pretty much able to sort of carry on like normal. During World War II, it became a training camp, and then after the war, there was a discovery made of some oil reserves, and the town was basically off and running, and it's been pretty much going pretty strong ever since then. I think I've only been there a couple of times. My daughter and I tried to do some of that pedal boating there once. It was a disaster. Two people with anxiety issues trying to man a boat. But there is a lot to see and do there. And so there's just sort of a little history lesson on Red Deer, if you care, which you likely don't, but I like my history. So you always get those little tidbits from me. Tegan came into the world in 1983 to her parents, Terry and Mike. She has a sister named Taylor, but I think it's a half sister or a stepsister. My apologies to the family if I'm wrong on that. Unfortunately, I don't know a lot about Tegan, but she was a very pretty girl. She was described as easy-spirited and outgoing with a very broad social circle of friends. In February of 2019, she was 23. There's only two pictures of her that I was able to find. She's got a very bright, wide smile, perfect white teeth. She's blonde in the pictures, and it appears to be natural. She didn't wear a lot of makeup. She's a very natural, approachable appearance about her. Quite good-looking features. There's just kind of an air about her that she was someone that you would want to be around. And at the age of 20, she'd had a little boy, which I'm not going to name. He'd be about 18 now, and I just don't think it's in anybody's interest for anyone to know his identity. He has a different last name than Tegan. I don't know anything about his father, but Tegan and him were not together in February of 2009 when this story begins. Tegan had been single, ready to mingle, and had met 19-year-old Brett Jones in late November, early December of 2008. Brett had been a junior A hockey player back in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, where he had gone to Dartmouth High School. He had played with the Dartmouth Subways in the Whalers Minor Hockey Association and then for a bit with the Maritime Junior A Hockey League. Now, apparently he was very good, like had the talent to go professional. But in his second year with the Subways, he had been dismissed from the team for what they call inappropriate conduct, which really could be any list of things. If you look at Hockey Canada's Code of Conduct, it's basically just don't do anything that would reflect badly on Hockey Canada. It's, you know, you play by the rules, resolve conflicts in a professional manner, which is kind of silly considering fighting actually appears to be a part of the sport itself. But it includes wordings like demonstrating respect towards all people through actions and words, directing comments or criticism appropriately, and avoiding public criticism of Hockey Canada, no doping, drugs, modesty in victory, and composure in defeat, and refraining from any behavior that could be construed as sexual harassment. So who knows what this conduct really was, but if I had to put my bets on it, I think it would be like aggression towards some of the other players on one too many occasions, showing himself to be a little bit of a loose cannon. But anyways, after high school, he abandoned his hockey dreams. He moved to Alberta to get work, which a lot of Maritimers do. Alberta just seems to fare better when the economy like around the world crumbles, which what would have been 2008. It's just because of the oil and gas industry, which I do not personally work in. I don't have any opinions on, at least ones that I will make public. So Brent had come out to Red Deer with a friend of his from back home to work on the oil rigs out here. Though the friend has since left and gone back home. Tegan and her son were living in the Anders Park area of town, which is on the south side. It's quite a nice area of town. There's a mix of detached family homes and some townhouses as well. It all looks very well maintained. I'm not sure what Tegan did for work. She was 23, so I'm going to assume she's renting in a townhouse or something. I also don't know how Tegan and Brett met, but they were both clean-cut, well-groomed, good-looking on the outside, appeared to make a very good couple. Now, Brett probably hadn't mentioned the incident that got him kicked out of the hockey team, but in the short couple of months that they'd been dating, Brett had shown that he didn't exactly resolve conflicts as professionally as his hockey codes of conduct would have preferred. There's nothing in the reports that he was violent with her, just that they fought a lot with like a lot of yelling and stuff like that, and mostly him yelling. Now, here's a lesson for the kids out there. When you're in a new relationship, you have to have your first fight kind of out of the way. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And everybody has their own argument style, including you. I mean, it would be a very obvious statement for me to say if a guy, you know, flips out and smacks you across the face in the very first fight, that's a big red flag. Run for the hills. Like, don't work it out with a guy like that. But let's say he doesn't do that. And instead he says, like, I can't do this right now. He grabs his keys, walks out the door, comes back an hour later, acts like nothing happened at all. You have to sort of ask yourself, is this an argument style that you can live with? Like, does it work for you? And maybe it matches your style and it's fine. But maybe you're one of those people that likes to get to the bottom of things right then and there. And those two styles can, in a lot of cases, escalate situations and cause just like more arguments and unhappiness overall. Now, if a person's argument style is to yell, scream, name call, whatever, you have to sort of analyze that. Now, a lot of people who never in any way, shape, or form ever become violent are yellers. I happen to be married to a yeller. If, God forbid, the potato masher jams the junk drawer, like, you're going to hear all kinds of colorful language around here. But my style is an analyzer. Like, I'm like, oh, what's the deeper issue here? How do we get to the bottom of all this? Like, it's perfectly fine. Our styles mesh to kind of de-escalate things. Whereas if your styles tend to escalate things, it's really not good for either one of you. And it might never lead to violence necessarily, but it doesn't just make for a very good or happy long-term partnership. I just think that meshing argument styles is important to consider when you're out there in the dating world. Now, I don't know what Tegan's argument style was, but they weren't meshing. And the arguments went from like first argument to second to third and were increasing in intensity, and he had started to become violent. So by 2 months in, Tegan was likely considering getting the heck out of Dodge. Now, her feelings would have been helped along a little bit by, in late January, Brett had checked himself into the hospital because he was feeling both suicidal and homicidal. So I have no way of knowing, but Tegan's probably feeling very empathetic towards Brett and his sort of troubled mind. I mean, she was described as very, very caring, and very caring people do tend to stick around situations a little bit longer than is maybe safe. But she was probably also thinking, like, this guy needs to go down in my dating history as a dodged bullet. At least I really hope she was thinking that. Now, I'm not sure how some of this went down, but either Mom Terry had an agreed meeting with Tegan on around lunchtime on the 5th of February of 2009, or she had maybe not been able to get a hold of her that morning. But she arrived at her place only to find Tegan in her bedroom, crumpled on the floor. She was an absolute bloodied and battered mess. So she immediately called 911. And when the first responders got there, unfortunately, Tegan was deceased. And when they were searching the house, they found a very frightened little 3-year-old boy hiding behind a door in the basement. Now, thankfully, he was alive, but this little peanut had a cut on his chin, and like a cut that required 7 stitches on a 3-year-old, and then bruises on his face. He was also, I mean, completely terrified. And like, I just don't want to think about that moment for the first responders who found him there. Now, whether Brett Jones' name was provided by the family or some friends, or they found it on Facebook as the guy that she was currently dating, they would have right away started looking for him. I mean, they always look for the boyfriend first. And when they didn't find him at his place or at work, they have to start tracking down him because he is now a person of interest. And now, fortunately, in cases like this, the person that they're interested in isn't usually a criminal mastermind, nor the keeper of dark and mysterious secrets. On February 6th, the woman called the police from her home in Nova Scotia. Now, she had gotten a call from her friend in Edmonton, and apparently Brett, who was a very good friend of hers back home, had called this woman and her roommate at around 3:30 in the morning on the 5th, and he'd asked if he could stay at her place for the night. Now, it's almost 4 in the morning, so she's like, I guess, whatever. Well, the Nova Scotia woman says that when he showed up there, he said that he had done something crazy, that he killed someone. And this was in front of the roommate as well, so she heard it as well. Well, they didn't think that he was serious. It's just one of those sick jokes. I was like, hey, what are you doing here? Oh, I killed someone. I need some place to lay low for a while. Ha ha ha. I mean, that kind of sick joke. Well, the next day he said he was taken off for Peace River, which was about a 5-hour drive from Edmonton. It's an oil and gas town. So based on his work history, they figured that's probably why he was really stopping in Edmonton. Well, one of the women decided to do the little Google internet search thing and saw a news article about a woman found dead in Red Deer and the name Tegan, which was the same name that the woman in Nova Scotia, who Brett used to crawl home all the time to family and friends, had mentioned that he had been dating. And the car that he had pulled up in looked a lot like the one that was in this news story that had been stolen. So while the Nova Scotia woman's busy calling the police, giving them the rundown on all this, the Edmonton women convince Brett to stay in Edmonton a little bit longer. Like, don't go to Peace River just yet. We'll make you some lunch. We'll make you a sandwich, whatever. Like, whatever they had to do to buy some time. And Brett, in addition to not being exactly a criminal mastermind, he also had some kind of misguided beliefs about loyalty. Like, I have friends that I love them enough to hide the bodies for, and I've told them that, but I would never actually do that. And like, I hope they know that, that's a saying. It doesn't mean, you know, if you murder someone, I'm going to risk my own freedom to help you get away with it. I mean, it's murder. That saying just means I'm not going to tell anyone that you stuffed your bra in the sixth grade or that you had a crush on Janice Foley's dad when you were 16. It's that kind of thing. It's not, you're not covering up a murder for the person. So anyways, the police showed up at the Edmonton apartment of the two good Samaritans that were not going to be accessories to anything after the fact. And Brett Jones, at the tender age of 19, was charged with second degree murder, which was later upgraded to first degree. And also included two counts of robbery, assault, causing bodily harm, like to a 3-year-old, which I think should be something more than just assault. Forcible confinement and theft. Now, the forcible confinement part is a federal charge. And if you commit a federal offense while you're also committing murder, it's considered first degree. So that's why it was up to, that's why they were able to up the murder charge. And when brought in for questioning, he laid out all of his whole stupidity to the police and then later pleaded guilty after pleading the charge down to second degree on December 9th, 2009. So what exactly was this stupidity and how did that play out? Well, on the night of February 4th, him and Tegan were arguing, as had become per usual. There was yelling on the part of Brett, and then Tegan, now this is based on both Brett's account and the autopsy findings. She's sitting on the edge of her bed, like probably questioning her life choices and wondering how to get out of this relationship with a guy whose emotional maturity is about the same level as a rabid squirrel. So when in a momentary lapse of all good sense and judgment, he went out to the attached garage and grabbed a garden edger. Now, what's a garden edger? Well, in this case, do you really want to know? There's two kinds. It doesn't really matter which kind it was. One is a steel pole. It's about a meter long with a handle and a rounded blade on the end with serrated edges. It's used to cut your lawn into like nice even edges along your sidewalks and driveways. And the other one is a motorized version. It's the same blade, but it rotates at like a million rotations per second or something completely terrifying. It doesn't matter because he came into her sitting calmly on the end of the bed and he swung it over his shoulders and then onto the side of her head with it. And that blow knocked her to the floor where, in the words of the court, he brutally beat her, adding at least another 5 blows to that. And if that wasn't bad enough, Tegan's little guy had been in his bedroom at the time. He came down the hall to see what was happening. Brett grabbed him, carried him down the stairs to the main floor. And this poor little guy struggled a bit because, like, what the fuck? Now, that's not what he was thinking in words, but you know what I'm saying. So Brett punched him in the face, which takes his momentary lapse in judgment to a whole nother level of evil. He then shoved him through the basement door where he, like, again, as a little 3-year-old little guy, he would have been thinking like, what the actual fuck? So he followed him back out. So Brett grabbed him again, this little cute as a button, never did anything to anyone, little pup, threw him down 8 steps to the concrete floor below, and then barricaded the door with furniture so that this now badly injured little boy who weighed about 32 pounds couldn't, I don't know, come up the stairs and charge at him and beat him up. Then he grabbed Tegan's car keys, a bottle of whiskey. Like, why do they always grab whiskey? It's like I just killed my girlfriend and I'm so parched kind of drink of choice. Her bank card, took off to Edmonton, calling his friend that he was coming, stopped at an ATM to take out $20 of Tegan's hard-earned money to buy himself some cigarettes. He was also happy to give a video reenactment of this to the police as well. I'm sure that was a spectacle worth their viewing time to store in their memory banks, most of them fathers, mothers, uncles themselves. And in case you hadn't worked out the math there, Tegan's little guy was trapped and injured in the basement for about 8 hours until he was found. I imagine his eyes as big as saucers, shaking like a leaf, big gaping wound on his little chin and bruises on his face. Just give me a moment. I need to collect myself. So at the sentencing, Terry told Brett in her victim impact statement, at which Brett did not cry and stammer, wail in grief. He just sat there and listened to them. "You are an evil, cruel monster, a monster with no remorse. Brett Jones, you have no right. I feel no remorse for you. You have given our families a life sentence, something I wish for you." And her dad, Michael, asked everyone in attendance to just kind of imagine the sheer horror of what his daughter, Tegan, had gone through that night. And he added that she was completely defenseless and ended his statement with, "Normal is no more and will never be again." Now, he also told the court that Tegan's little guy, I mean, misses his mom terribly, as you would, and is still really scared of this bad man. And, like, I hope he's okay. I really, really hope he's okay. He is entering adulthood himself now, and I just really hope good things for him. So even though he pled guilty, it's still a mandatory life sentence, but he can ask for parole after 16 years. So that is coming up, actually, on February 6, 2025. And it's really a tough one for me because, like, he was only 19, he's 34 now. A lot can change with a person. And based on the parole board and the decisions that they tend to make, he might not get out this time, but he will eventually get out. And I think the best that we can hope for is that he has made some changes. He's kind of had some come to Jesus moments while he's been in there, and hopefully some therapy, and stayed clean. Now, one of the things mentioned in his pre-sentencing hearing was that he had a substance abuse issue and a personality disorder, which is completely different than a mental health issue. But I mean, like, come on, who doesn't have a personality disorder these days? I think that the thing that I need to change about my own thinking about these cases is that I really hope that prison is always, like, that it's really hard on the person. Like, I hope in this case that somebody punched him in the face and threw him down 8 stairs. But the problem with that thinking is that that kind of treatment on the inside is only going to make him more apt to continue being violent on the outside. Like 16 years of you before me thinking, I just don't think that that can really lead to anything good on the outside. So I'd have to change my thinking to, like, well, I hope while he's in there, somebody gives him a hug, it tells him he's a good boy, makes him a grilled cheese sandwich. But I just don't think I can change my thinking that much. Like, I still really kind of hope somebody punched him in the face while he's been in there. And I don't think that that makes me the asshole, but you might disagree. And that was the horrible murder of Tegan Klein and the battering and confinement of her little defenseless and innocent little peanut, which I'm not going to get over that, Brett. So whatever you think of my little podcast, I really don't care. And I'm going to be back again next week. You know what to do and what I'm grateful for.